Welcome to Herb W. Morgan's Slaying Bulls and Bears, a podcast about economics, markets, investing, politics, and profit. Every Monday, in less than 20 minutes, Wall Street portfolio manager Herb W. Morgan distills the complex and complicated into the simple and sensical. Here's Herb now.
Good morning, everybody. It's Herb Morgan, Senior Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer of Cantor Managed ETF Portfolios. Today is Monday, December 11th, 2023. This is my weekly economic and market commentary. As a reminder, the presentation has been prepared by us for use with investors and financial advisors who are each expected to make their own investment decisions. Nothing contained herein should be treated as investment advice. There are no recommendations for the purchase or sale of any securities. Everything is purely for informational purposes and does not constitute any form of tax or investment advice. So, yet another up week in equity markets, despite continuing evidence of slowing economic activity. Last week, the evidence of slowing activity came in the form of multiple labor and jobs reports, yet the market continued to grind higher. Leadership seems to have switched as well. As you can see, another week of outperformance for small cap stocks. You can see S&P 600, similar to the Russell 2000, up about 1%, while the S&P was up only 0.25%, and emerging markets were actually negative. Bond markets continue to catch a strong bid as expectations for inflation continue to drop. Expectations, therefore, for interest rate hikes continue to wane, and expectations for interest rate cuts begin to grow. Let's take a look, though, at some of the economic data. First of all, a big drop in factory orders. They were expected to go down 3%. They were down 3.6%. You can see we haven't seen a drop like that since the COVID closures. Now, those drops were much bigger, as you can see. But when you start talking about a monthly drop of 3.6, that's a pretty significant slowdown kind of number. Back out the big transportation, however, still down 1.2%. More important because transportation can skew one way or the other. Okay, let's get into services. We got the S&P Global Services PMI came in just above 50.8. Up from 50.6. It was right in line with expectations. That's a typo. The expectations were 50.8, not 60.8. ISM's version of the services reading is stronger. Say it rose 51.8 to 52.7, a little bit above the expectations of 52.3. Remember, for both of these, above 50 is expansion, below 50 is contraction. Remember that services is about 85% of the U.S. economy, where manufacturing is about 15. New orders above 55.5, that's good. Business activity rose a little bit, and employment rose a little bit. So the services sector continues to be the thing that keeps the economy hanging on. But as evidence continues to mount, forecasts are getting updated, and we'll see here in a little bit that going out into the future, we expect that to slow down a little bit as well. Let's get into jobs because jobs are where it's at right now. The Fed has this dual mandate. Number one is price stability, and number two is full employment. Price stability, they seem to be making great progress. They're still above their definition of price stability, which is 2% core PC inflation. And they feel they can continue to keep rates high or hike rates because the jobs market's been very strong. And weekly initial claims for unemployment really haven't changed. 220,000 is kind of the number. We've been there for a very, very long time, going back all the way to late 2021 after coming down from the COVID-related closures of 2020. And even continuing claims, which had been on the rise, were down a little bit last week. But this is just a snapshot weekly report. We want to look at the broader picture. So we look at the JOLTS or job openings report. Remember, coming out of COVID, jobs available was about 12 million in the United States. Well, we fell from 9.3, which was a revision from the first reported number, 9.55. all the way down to 8.7. That's a big monthly decline. There's some stair steps. Look at this graph here. It looks exactly like the CPI or the PCE inflation graph, right? As job openings were larger, people were less willing to work. Wages got pressed higher. Higher wages turned into higher prices for products, goods, and services. And as those numbers begin to come down, you'll see it here as well in the JOLTS report. So less job openings. Then, of course, we move on and we get two big national employment reports, always in the first week of the month. We get the ADP, automatic data processing. This is the company that does payroll for companies. So their statistical methodology relies on their internal data of the companies they do payroll for. Very solid report, very good, high quality data. They say that private payrolls only rose 103,000 nationwide last month. That was well below the 130,000 estimate. Services jobs gained a little, goods producing jobs gained a little, and okay, but these numbers are not massive numbers like we've been having. They're not negative. We're not in job losses. So there's no urgency for the Fed to cut rates to try to stimulate employment. Still working on the inflation side of things. The government has a report called the Bureau of Labor Statistics has a report, which is a different model and a different methodology than ADP, but it tells a similar story. They say that payrolls were up 199,000 in November after gaining 150 in October, and the unemployment rate fell from 3.9 to 3.7. This gave a lot of credibility and fuel to the folks that are arguing strongly and reasonably for the soft landing scenario. The soft landing meaning the Fed has done its job, inflation numbers are coming down, we won't slip into a recession, and if we see some weakness, we can begin to cut rates and we can move forward. Well, based on this, they have a pretty good argument at this point. Other things we found from the jobs reports was that average hourly earnings were up 0.4% and 4% on a year-over-year basis. The percentage increase, well, certainly great for those getting the raise, but it's down considerably from, say, 6 and 8 back here. And that is argument, again, that the Fed's efforts are having an impact on the inflationary numbers. That also will drive up productivity because you're not raising wages as much and drives down the unit labor costs. Red is unit labor costs coming down, blue is productivity going up, getting closer to what I would call equilibrium in the labor market. Labor market, again, as I mentioned, being a prime, one of the prime drivers and determinants of inflationary pressure in the economy. We got a trade deficit number. As you can see, the trade deficit is coming down. That's a positive for GDP, but it's still absolutely massive. Trade deficit rose a little bit to $64 billion, up from 61 or down, if you want to say that. Imports up 0.2%. Exports actually fell. So zoom in closely, it's not the greatest. This is a long-term chart. Much of this always has to do with energy. As energy prices have been coming down, that can have a positive impact on the trade deficit. We got a report from consumer credit. It was expected to go up $8.5 billion. It actually went up $5 billion. We're starting to see reports of auto loan delinquencies, other consumer loan delinquencies increasing, reports of increased hardship distributions from 401k balances. This is all a sign of a slowly weakening and a slowly softening consumer labor worker in the United States. This is another example. This is a little bit less confidence, and a little bit less confidence will cause folks to take on less credit. However, conflicting data is what we're all about. The very next day, we get another report, this one from the University of Michigan, and this one says, no, consumers actually feel a little better. So the October could have been a blip. We'll wait and see what November and the holiday shopping season data looks like for consumers. Here, University of Michigan's consumer sentiment reading says that people are feeling a little better as inflationary pressures wane. Specifically, it's oil, and oil coming down significantly, gas prices coming down significantly, unless you live where I do in California. We did get as high as $7. We're now down to $6 a gallon. And I know those of you that are listening in in places like Georgia, Louisiana, North Carolina, and so forth, you're shocked at those numbers because you're paying maybe less than $3. But yes, that's the world we live in out here in crazy, crazy California. Let's take a look at how the market's been behaving, though. Just, we haven't done that in a while. The S&P 500, you can see, 15, 20 minutes ago when I took this screenshot, the S&P 500 is well over 4,600. This is a year-to-date graph of the S&P. You know, we had this 10% drop, sort of a textbook 10% correction, and then the market began to rally, and it just rallied hard. And it's been rallying hard since the end of October. You can see the S&P, it's a little dark, a little hard to read, but up almost 12% since that sort of bottom, if you want to call it that, that bottom here that took place. And so people are getting concerned about valuations again. Naturally, the Fed is probably surprised because the last thing they want to do is inflate asset prices with the expectations of their activity. When they're concerned about inflation, that's the last thing they want to see happen. And if I broaden this out a little bit and take this all the way back to the COVID drop, where the S&P 500 dropped 34%, no fun at all. We shut down economic activity. But you know, the thing about drops, they do two things. Number one, they make my phone ring. And some of you are worried and concerned, and that's fine. That's normal. We like to discuss it and talk about every other time it's dropped, what happens after the big drops? Well, usually, at least in the past, we've gone up and gotten new all-time highs in the markets. And you can see that's a more than 100% run there from the bottom. Then we had the massive stimulus, the interest rates, free money, the fiscal stimulus, the monetary stimulus, and of course, a 114% rise in the S&P 500. But then again, we had to do the right thing, which is begin to remove the economic stimulus because the inflationary the pressures that were caused by it. And we get a 25.5% drop, followed by a big 27% increase, followed by a 10% drop. That's what we had this year. Some of you panicked, not many. Really, most of you saw this as a normal part of investing. Obviously, it's unique. It's always unique, right? Every story, every bear market is unique. This was not a bear market, it was a correction, but they're always unique. This time is, you know, we have negative money supply growth. We have bank failures. We have the Fed raising interest rates. We have Israel and Hamas. We have Russia and Ukraine. We have all of these things. Yet the market bottomed, consolidated, and rallied back hard, up 11.25% since October 27th. So today, everybody's asking, well, what do you think? What do you think for 24? And, you know, it's tough. It's really tough because I always do this. I take the line, put it down my yellow pad, and I say, what makes the glass half full versus half empty? And I think to be any good at this, you need to be able to look at both, understand both, and not just sort of blindly take the side, you know, I believe the bearish cause or I believe the bullish cause, right? So let's take a look at the bearish side right now. They point out that the blended forward PE ratio for the S&P 500 is 21 times earnings. That's not cheap by any stretch of the imagination. And it's really not cheap when you think about a 4.25% to a 5% risk-free yield on 10% US Treasury. A lot of the argument from the statisticians or the economists, the strategists that are bearish is that the forward earnings estimates are going to come down hard next year. They believe that we have peaked in earnings. I believe that's always a very dangerous position to take. It's the constant underestimation of great American companies to adapt, to reconfigure balance sheets, to innovate, to improvise, to become more efficient. So I never like to predict peak earnings except in a very short period. Hey, things might drop a little bit next year. I find that argument not that great. There's also the argument that inflation is going to remain stubbornly high. Getting down to this 3% was easy. Getting below that number and getting to the target of 2% is going to be a big challenge. And if that's the case, then the Fed won't be able to cut interest rates or will drag their feet on cutting interest rates next year as the economy slows. I find that argument to be pretty good. The political dysfunction in America argument has been going on since the dawn of the nation. The ability of both sides to promote false narratives about the others and to mischaracterize the other's behavior and the other's position has been going on since John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. It's true, this time is rather unique. We have an octogenarian president running for re-election who's clearly has diminished mental capacity. There's just no doubt about that. And then we have an ex-president who's running who's got multiple legal criminal challenges. And so, yes, our situation is dysfunctional. Two members of Congress, one member voted out of Congress last week. Another member announcing resignation, who's a former speaker, last week. We have it, but I think we've always had it. And I think the beauty of our system is our system and the checks and balances of power on the different branches of government. U.S. GDP is expected to slow considerably by the third and fourth quarter of next year. 0.6% is the estimate for growth for Q3. 0.7 is the estimate for Q4. Those numbers can quickly go lower or higher. And I see all kinds of data that suggest, yes, GDP growth is slowing. That 5% plus we got in Q3 is not likely, it cannot repeat itself. U.S. debt to GDP, the federal debt and the spending issue. We continue to spend as if we're in recession, which is the time to deficit spend. At least that's what my textbooks told me in school. Or spend like we're in war, another time where it's appropriate to deficit spend. We're not necessarily in the shooting war ourselves. The Fed's balance sheet, that's the amount of debt that essentially is vaporized because it's the Fed. And obviously global instability. All of these things are accurate and legitimate. But on the other side of the ledger, inflation is dropping hard. We're seeing energy prices come down. We're seeing a lot of the different consumer items come down. There's some that, you know, some food things that are still high, but we're seeing it. The economy has always always persevered. It has always been extremely resilient, no matter what the situation, whether it's rising rates and a declining money supply, which we have right now. But our ability to adapt and overcome and innovate, the ability of capitalism, of individual profit-seeking persons, entities, to do what they need to do for their own self-interest continues to benefit many folks beyond their own self-interest. The Fed does have room to cut interest rates, significant room to cut interest rates, should the unemployment numbers tick up next year. And earnings per share, there's nothing to say that they have to peak at 241. They could certainly go higher, especially with tech and innovation driving things, artificial intelligence, 5G. The geopolitical situation is so horrible, but every bit of news reporting and data we see suggests that the bad guys are losing, that Russia is failing miserably in its attempts in the Ukraine, and that Hamas, of course, gravely miscalculated the ability and the resolve of the Israelis. And of course, profit margins remain very strong. So where do I stand on this? I'm probably just to the right of the center line. I'm by nature a little bit of an optimist. And I look over here at the other side and I see things as a little bit expensive. Things have been expensive many, many times in my career, and that's never a reason to sell. That being said, our equity weightings are at benchmark weightings. We are not overweight and we are not underweight. We're probably not overweight, mostly because of valuation. The other thing we've got going this week is a Fed meeting. Now, given the rise in risk assets, stocks and bonds have risen a lot since October 27. I expect that the Fed is not happy about that because they're saying, they're looking at the market saying, well, you guys are just betting that we're going to cut interest rates next year. And well, quite frankly, it's a pretty good bet, right? But they're going to come out strong. They're trying to tamp down our expectations for inflation. So they're never going to say something this week like, hey, don't worry, if the economy slows, we'll just cut interest rates. That would cause risk assets to rally like they've been doing. They don't want to see that. That's inflationary. What they're going to come out and say is, look, the labor market is strong. We don't have high unemployment. Inflation is still stubbornly above our 2%. And therefore, we are likely to be data dependent. We're not going to rule out more hikes, but we're definitely going to be higher for longer. And that you should not, you, Mr. Market, Mrs. Market, should not be relying on the Powell put. We're not just going to come in and cut interest rates and save the day, even though we all know the Fed will. Despite this message, market knows there will be no more rate hikes this year. The Fed's going to say that there could be, and that might give us a little wobbly in the markets this week. Nothing to panic or sell about, in my opinion. Data, nothing today, nothing special today. Small business optimism, CPI on Tuesday, look at the estimate. 0% month over month, that's two in a row. PPI on Wednesday was negative in October, expected zero for November. You're going to start seeing the year-over-year numbers come down considerably. Then the Fed meeting, it's all about the statement, the messaging at the end. There will be no cut. There will be no hike. Jobless claims, retail sales, import and export prices, New York State manufacturing, capacity utilization and production, and then manufacturing PMIs for December. These are flash readings, so they're not the finals. Both S&P, manufacturing and services, both from S&P, but they are both flash readings. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget it's available as a podcast as well. Please subscribe, give us a thumbs up and a like. Appreciate it very much. Thank you. Be back again in 1 week.
Thank you for listening to Slaying Bulls and Bears. If you'd like to download the slides for this week's podcast, go to www.efficient-portfolios.com and join our mailing list. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, rate us online, and share with a friend if you found this helpful. See you next week.